And we've got open lines for you here on Coast to Coast. We're going to come back in a moment. We'll go straight to Dory in Charlotte, North Carolina, to finish up their story about her cats. And then we'll go to the rest of the calls in just a moment. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie back with you. Okay, so we're going back to Dory in Charlotte, North Carolina. For those of you who might just be joining us, she's had cats all her life and a couple dogs. One of her cats lived 24 years. And anyway, she fell in love with a little kitten that her boyfriend brought home. And when she didn't want it, but she brought it home. And then all of a sudden, she comes in with a couple more. So pick up the story from there, Dory. What happened?
Well, I had the two kittens in my one arm, and I'm trying to tell him they're his kittens, they're his babies. His role is to raise them. They don't jump on the counters, take care of them, don't scratch anything. And he didn't like that because he was very possessive of me. And he saw it like a little single child, another child coming in, taking mom's love. Well, he ran off. The next day, the kittens were gone. And I said, where are they? And he's like, Mom, I'm glad you're home. I'm like, no, where are they? So he takes me over to the air conditioner unit where he opened the little slat and he had the kittens jump out. The kittens were under the house. It took me 2 weeks to get them back in the house.
Jeez.
And then he raised them. He figured, okay, got to do it. He raised them. So when the runt was 12 years old, she got a tumor. Well, he died in 2012. And I told him, never leave my side. Never.
No.
So he was my baby. So when the little runt was getting sick, she was dying, and I would be there at night and in the middle of the night trying to comfort her.
Oh, they're like babies.
The vet wanted, she was young, and the vet wanted me to spend the last days with her, didn't want to put her down. So I held her in my arms the day she died. And so one night when I was comforting her, the cat bell rang on the cat tree. No other cat. The other cat wasn't near it. And then he was always very possessive from my waist to my upper body. Nobody could go near me because that was his area.
He was always with you. But he came back to visit you after he passed, didn't he?
He is always with me.
Is he he's still coming around?
He is. When I have other cats and they try to sit on my chest, they all of a sudden look up and they're staring at a spot, either to my left, to my right. They follow like something circling us, and then they jump down. Nobody will come near my chest area.
Let me tell you, Dory, cats are probably the most supernatural animal ever, much more than dogs. I love dogs, but cats have that supernatural feeling about them. They really do. Let's go back to some more calls here. West of the Rockies, Santa Rosa, California. Andy's with us. Hi, Andy. Welcome to the show.
Hey, George.
Hey there. Thanks for holding so long. My God, over an hour.
I've been listening to a speakerphone.
Well, welcome to the program. What's going on?
So, I told you before about the high oak you miss. And Red Elk?
Yep. Red Elk is not with us anymore, but...
He's not. Well...
He was a good guest.
Yeah, maybe he is with us.
Well, that's a good point. He probably is that way.
The corporate takeover is happening. But necromancy, though, is a problem.
Tell me more.
Necromancy is a problem. And it's when you have conversations with the dead and whatnot, you gotta be careful because who are you talking to?
You think it could be an evil spirit or something?
Sure.
Well, you always got to be careful about that to be sure. But some demons will probably try to trick you. I think that's very, very possible. But you got to weigh that and take a chance. Text and tweets, what do you have for us, Tommy? Tommy? Oh, he's not ready? Oh, he's not. He should be doing his job. What's he doing? Let's go to Sue in North Carolina. Hi, Susan. Go ahead.
Yes, hello, George. Thank you so much for keeping Coast to Coast alive and well.
You are very welcome.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, I had a question. I can't really recall who the guests were, but they talked about climate science, climate change. It could have been Mr. Don Lincoln or maybe Mr. Tony Heller. I'm not sure. But what I was wondering is I'm trying to deal with when they talk about the climate and what's causing global warming, and one might contradict the other. In other words, one of them the other evening said that the glacier ice was melting in, I think, it around Iceland or somewhere.
Yes.
And then, but one of them a few days or nights before that previous said that that type of opinion was preposterous. What I was trying to figure out is which one you should.
Who do you believe? Let me tell you something, Sue. I'll have guests on who are not all one-sided. I mean, I'll have one guest that has one view. I'll have another guest that has a totally opposite view. It's up to you to go finding out the information that they're talking about to see what you believe and what you think is happening. I happen to think, for example, that climate change is happening, but I don't think it's all man-made. I think the planet's going through a cycle. The solar system's heating up. The sun's heating up. I think a lot of that has to do with that. Maybe most of it has to do with that. Not to be confused with humans polluting the planet, which we're doing in a big, big way. But I'll have guests on who have different views. Tim Ball, the meteorologist, he'll talk about climate change. He believes it's happening through the solar system. Some other person, as you just mentioned, will believe that it's man-made. Yeah, but it's up to you. In terms of who do you believe, you got to go out and find out yourself. And that's the important thing. Let's go to Joe in Boston. Welcome to the program. Hi, Joseph.
Hi, George. I'd like to ask your opinion on the end times, what you think of it, and then I'll give you my opinion.
Okay. I think every civilization has felt that they were in their end times. We could very well be in ours now. I can't say no. I can't say yes. There are some weird signs out there. If you look at Revelation, they sure seem to match up a lot of things that are happening here, don't they?
Do you think the do you think the Antichrist has been born yet?
That's a good question. I don't know.
All right, my opinion now, what I think. I've talked to a lot of people about when the end times, when Jesus is coming. Some people have said maybe 5 years. Some have said 8. I think that it could happen in less than 20 years if events speeded up, like the morality got worse, abortion, homosexuality, and, a lot of other things. But some people would say, your opinion is like a false prophet. You know, who's telling the truth and who isn't, or are you just guessing wrong, you know?
Do you believe the Bible?
Yes, do you?
Yeah, I do. And it's subject to interpretation, of course. But I think there are a lot of things in the Bible that are possible, indeed. So let's go back to Tom. He's got another text or tweet for us. Tommy, I got you when you were busy taking calls. Sorry.
I was trapped. This one from Matthias in Austin, Texas. It simply says, what is your definition of whimsical?
Something fun and light in ha-ha-ha type. Whimsical.
Yeah. I think of magic.
Magic? Whimsical? Magic. Hey, we got to get whimsical. Who's our magician? What's his name?
Our magician. Jim Carroll?
From the Magic House.
There's a few of them. Oh, Brandon Scott.
Brandon Scott, that's right. Yeah, good guy. We got to get him back on it.
That's right. He hasn't been on in a while.
But what we need is Lynn McTaggart to do some intention experiments on COVID.
She's amazing.
She's one of the best.
She really is. And Brandon, too. We'll get Brandon back on.
Yep, absolutely. Okay. By the way, I'm getting lots of emails from people wanting to know about live stage shows for 2020. Can you kind of give us an overview of what our position is right now?
Yeah, I can. You know, there's really not much to say. Our hands are tied until things open up, but yet we've got to have time to plan things to make them work. So it's kind of a juggling act. We have a list of counties and states that are a little more open than others, and we're just kind of judge things. What I'm really waiting for is once the vaccines come out, I'm hoping that things really open up and settle down. So You know, I mean, we're going to do them. We're going to get back in fold, and we're going to pick some really great places to go.
I mean, you've got about how many, what's the percent of people in Everett, Washington that are still holding on their tickets?
Oh, there's like 80%. There's like 80%.
Yeah, I mean, as soon as they clear Everett, we're going back there.
Yeah, people in Houston, not everybody has returned their tickets. So, you know, we're going to be there. We're going to be there.
And we need like a five-month head start, right?
It usually takes about 5 months to plan these things. Now, because we had sold tickets to like Houston and Everett beforehand, we might not need 5 months, but we do need some time in there to really make it go.
If they're still holding on to their tickets.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, we'll just keep letting people know, but we're trying.
Well, let's keep our fingers crossed that 2021 becomes a little more normal.
Again. It's got to be.
It's something
else.
It's
got to be.
I mean, what's happening in, I'm not in L.A., I'm in St. Louis, obviously. What's happening in Los Angeles right now?
I'll tell you what, my house is really clean because there's nothing to do. You can't even go out and eat on the sidewalk.
And the city itself now has shut down even more than L.A. County, hasn't it?
It has. And the last thing I read is today was a deadline for them to bring some proof as to if eating on the sidewalk really does hurt things in any way. And I didn't read what happened with that, but there's court things going on all over the place.
I mean, LA County, you can eat outside. Yes or no?
No, not now.
You cannot.
Nope.
And LA City, you cannot.
Right.
What a mess.
You can't even go out after 10 o'clock. I mean, we have special IDs, so, you know, I can go on the streets, but they don't want you.
You have to. You keep working until 2 a.m.
But they don't want you to, you know, they don't want you to be out.
All right, well, let's take some more calls here. Let's go next to Julie in El Paso, Texas. Hi, Julie.
Hi, George. How are you?
I'm great. How about you? Everything good in Texas?
Well, it's Texas.
It is Texas.
I just wish people in El Paso would listen and wear their masks. You see a lot of people out there not wearing their masks. And I can't see, but, you know, I have a guide that goes with me sometimes. But my reason for my call, George, I want you to put me on your prayer list because I'm on dialysis here at home.
Your kidney's going on you? What's going on?
Yeah, one of the kidneys is gone. But they got me on dialysis, and I'm here at home, which is good because I'd rather be at home than at the clinic, you know?
Yep. Now, when you're on dialysis, you have like an IV stuck in you somewhere, right?
Yeah, it's like a little tube that they have on your stomach.
Do they slit you a little bit?
Yes.
Okay, and then they put the tube is connected to the kidney?
Yes. And then it's connected to another tube that's where the water comes out and then the whatever else.
And the machine, there's a machine that pumps it, right?
Yes, uh-huh. Yes.
Interesting. Does it hurt?
No, not at all. You can have the liberty to get up, like if you have to go to the restroom or you have to go get something. It's a big, long cord.
All right. We'll put you on the prayer list.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
And I want you to scold the people in El Paso to wear their masks, okay?
Wear your masks, folks. If anything, for other people who are scared that you're not. Let's go to Barry in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Hello there, Bear.
Hello there, Joe. Martha and I are sitting here on the edge of my bed. It is both of our birthdays. Hers were December.
That's right. Happy birthday to both of you.
Absolutely. And it's our wedding anniversary also.
That's right.
Her birthday.
That's cool. 17 years, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's the 17 of the finest years I've ever spent in my life, George.
Wow, good for you, Barry.
No kidding.
Classic,
I was going to tell you a scary story, but I'll save it for another time. But I just want to say hello to all my friends and buddies out there in coast-to-coast land. And I just want to echo what the rest of the callers have to say, George. And you and Tommy do put on the absolute greatest radio program on the air.
Well, thank you, Barry. It's very kind. I got to tell you, the feedback that we get from you folks is fantastic.
All right, Martha's going to say hello, and then I'll say goodnight.
Okay. Hi, Martha.
Hey, George, how are you doing?
Good. Happy birthday, happy anniversary, and keep going.
Okay. We're planning on it. Hope it's going to keep going.
Do you remember one of our first shows in Asheville?
Yep.
Yes, uh-huh.
And before the show started, there was some guy kind of dancing in the front of the stage. And
yeah.
I was gonna have him arrested, and Tom said, "No, that's Barry."
Oh, that is hilarious, Jordan. You're right. I was just a dancing around because I was happy on cloud nine. Yeah. I think he thought I was drunk, but I actually wasn't.
Well, you know, actually, when we first came in, there was only one person in the theater. Martha, you didn't know this. Apparently, it was Barry, and he was lying on his back on the chairs. The balcony was over him, and we did call the police because we thought this guy was drunk or something. They came in, and Barry's, you know, sprawled out on these two chairs, and the police officer said, sir, what's your name? And he said, Barry. And he said, where'd you come from? And Barry pointed to the upper deck of the balcony.
Oh, my gosh, George, I don't hardly remember that.
It's a joke, Barry. I made it up.
Oh, God, it doggone you. That's my job, making up stories.
Boy, if you didn't remember that, that means you might have been into the sauce.
Oh, I'm telling you, George, I thought, wait a minute. Good.
All right, well, you two enjoy your anniversary and your birthdays, okay?
Okay, and just let me say real quick, George, we love you guys, and goodbye and good luck.
Absolutely. Karen in the state of Washington, let's squeeze you in before the break. Karen, go ahead.
All right. In 1987, my mom was in the hospital, and we were losing her to cancer. And I was going up when I got off work at night and reading the Bible to her. And I was 23, and I started reading this one part out of Daniel and Ezekiel through the week, and I kept telling her, Mom, this sounds like UFOs. You know, I mean, the way they're describing them, they sound like UFOs to me. And long story short...
I think you were right, too.
I think so, too. Well, I'll tell you what happened. Later on that night, my mom just started looking at me. And she sat up in the bed, which she hadn't done for weeks.
Mm-hmm.
And we locked eyes. And she had always told me not to say that it was UFOs. You know, you can't guess what God is. Don't do that.
Right, right.
Me. And so I was sat there, and she passed away. And I called my family, my sister, my brothers, told them what happened. And by the time we were leaving the hospital, it had started to become daylight. And I walked out of the hospital, and, you know, you'll see a shooting star, you know, go across the sky. Well, this shooting star shot straight up from the ground.
That was Mama.
It was Mama. And as I got to my driveway at my house, a kid that I worked with was driving by, and I saw this really bright light coming over the mountain. Now, this is daylight. And I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, that's an airplane. It's going really fast. And as it got up to my house, it was not an airplane. It looked like the bottom of a boat surrounded by a triangle.
Wow.
And the bottom of the boat looked like it was covered with, like, the only thing that I could say is, like, liquid mercury. And it was reflecting the clouds in the roof of the house across the street. And I looked over at the truck, and it had stopped. And I was like, Dwayne, because he worked with me. And I go, Dwayne, what is that? And he goes, I don't know, Karen. And I just looked at it, and I fell back on the steps that led to my house. And I go, hello, Mom.
That's right. She was that. They use different ways to visit you or communicate with you. They do. In a moment, by the way, we're going to be talking with psychic Anthony Carr. Get ready for that. And welcome back to Coast. Harry Houdini was an amazing illusionist, and not many people know more about him than psychic Anthony Carr. Now, how did your dad get to know Harry Houdini? How did that start?
Well, from what I understand, what he told me, and my mother told me and continues to tell me, was he started off with, here in Toronto, Conklin Shows, which is actually in the very spot where you come here to do your show, the Canadian National Exhibition Ground.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And I think it's the Queen Elizabeth Building, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right. That's the name of the theater.
See, I'm psychic. I know these things. Plus, I just drove by it. Anyway, he used to go back and forth to the States to work. What was that? The Atlantic Pier.
Which yeah.
Steel Pier. And also the one on Coney Island, which is, I think, the steeplechase pier. So apparently, and if you look on my website there, under that Houdini stuff, and on the YouTube, possibly on your website, is pictures of the diving team on the steel pier. I think it was later in the 40s and 30s with the sign on the marquee. There's got Abbott and Costello and Sammy Kaye swinging its way with Sammy Kaye, Harry James, and all that. So he started going there when he was about 18 or 19 and diving. And Houdini, or Eric, I think this time...
Eric Weiss.
So he was doing one of his stunts there. And anyway, one thing led to another. And my dad was a world champion high platform diver. And, you could... In fact, he learned to dive when he was in Naples as a kid.
Like the kind you see at the Olympics, right? He bounces off a springboard, that kind of diver?
No, he's a high platform diver. If you go, he'd go off a platform about 110 feet into about 6 or 7 feet of water.
Jeez.
And we always go, well, what's the secret? The secret is the minute you feel your toes or your fingers hit the water, you immediately have to come up, or else you'll kill yourself.
You smash. You hit the bottom, right?
I guess I've mentioned this a few times, that Houdini or Harry or Eric was also a very good high diver and swimmer himself, which very few people know. And he was getting ready to perform one of his trunks locked up and thrown in the water things there. And he had an incredible barrel chest, like a very wide chest, which was, I think, I explained how he could get out of those straitjackets.
Well, didn't he do that in the Detroit River, and they had to pull him up fast because something went wrong?
Apparently. And of course, the legend of the story is he kept hearing his mother's voice calling him, and that's how he found his way up through the surface of the ice.
And then he gets that sucker punch, and it kills him.
Oh, well, that was in Montreal. That was the...
No, it was in Detroit.
No. It was in Montreal at McGill University, and two of these students came...
But he died. He died in Detroit.
He died in Detroit, and the students, the two that came up to him, one of the guys was on the boxing team, and he was, he said, well, Mr. Houdini, we understand you can take a full... punch in the solar plexus. Well, before he got a chance to get turned around, the kid suckered him and burst his appendix.
Oh, God.
So he didn't let on.
And Harry at that time had a broken ankle, so he really wasn't ready for anything.
That's right, exactly. So by the time he got to Detroit, he was starting to feel the pinch, as it were, from the pernicious anemia and so on. Well, then it burst, and of course, in those days, no penicillin and nothing to get
through. Nothing.
So he died of peritonitis. And that, of course, was on
Halloween.
Halloween,
yeah.
which was October 29th. Of course, but to get back to the where my dad met him, was he used to do these tricks with rings, which he didn't do that often, but because these are these, card tricks which require close quarters and like an audience right up to you.
Well, was he a magician, Anthony, or an escape artist?
He was really an illusionist, but as an escape artist. And to him, advertising and publicity was everything.
Yeah.
And he had all of these rings, which were like, what do you call them? Not diamond rings, the rubies, red rubies, not real ones. So I have the ring that he gave to my father, because my father taught him some tricks about using his lungs for the highest capacity to build. And he had a much wider, I should say, thicker chest than did my father, and he could take in tons of air. And you gotta remember, in those days, these guys, my dad, and Houdini, I mean, they they were worldwide, you know, they were streetwise, and they took a shine to each other, just like my dad did with George Raft when they met here in Toronto.
Okay, all right.
And same thing, it was through a diving show and so on, and we both appeared on stage here because he was on tour with Scarface at that time, with Paul Muni, George Raft was. So anyway, they hit it off, and you know, he gave him one of these rings. When my dad died, he passed it on to me, and I do have half sisters and brothers in New York, and they also have some of the baubles and things.
Oh, that's cool.
So anyway, you know, these guys, you have to remember the setting in which they function. There were these guys were, you know, had very little no formal education basically. And they lived by their wits, and they're, you know, street guys. They're both pretty tough. So, you know, they hit it off, and they kept and each time that he came back, I used to say to my dad, you know, he says, hang on to this ring. It's my lucky ring. You keep it. Well, it must have been true because, less than 4 years later is when he died from that punch.
Yeah, he needed to have the ring on.
After he'd given my father the ring. And I don't know if you know this or not, but you know, one of the really definitive books written about Houdini is, which is entitled "The Code Mystery: Spirit Secret Solved." Now, the author on the cover is a New Yorker, priest, Canon William V. Rauscher, but the book was actually ghostwritten by Alan Spraggett, who's written 14, 15 books on the occult. And I met through him. I met Walter Gibson, who was the creator of remember? Who knows what evil lurks in the heart?
Uh-huh. The shadow.
That wasn't very good. Was that better?
You've been into the wine tonight, Anthony?
No. Right. Into the coffee, actually. Anyway, a little bit of information that not too many know is that he actually was not officially or legally married to Beatrice. I don't know if you knew that or not.
I thought he was.
No, the ceremony was performed by a bogus rabbi who was just part of the Carney group and act and circus that he worked with. So legally, they were living in sin without benefit of clergy, as we used to say.
I didn't know that when I saw Tony Curtis in the Harry Houdini movie.
Yeah, well, he was legally married to his co-star, and that was Janet Leigh, right?
He was, yeah.
Yeah, that's right. Anyway, you know, Houdini's become and remains a very prominent part of the American culture. You know, he's ingrained in our psyche as some kind of a Superman or a super being, and I don't know what more I could say about him, but he was good friends with Arthur Ford, of course, you know, and Arthur Ford was the man who, and Alan Spraggett wrote the book about Alan Ford, and it was called The Man Who Talked with the Dead. And, of course, you know, most people always talk about a lot of these mediums, spiritualists, they always talk about talking to the dead. Well, you know, as you know, anybody can talk to the dead. It's getting the dead to talk back that's the real problem.
Well, with the Houdini, and then I want to get into some of your psychic work that you've done, Anthony, but with Houdini as a magician, escape artist, everything else, way before his time, he was also obsessed with trying to communicate with his mother. And he went to medium after medium after medium, and he could never find the right one, could he?
Well, the jury is still out in my mind as to whether, you know, we can actually contact the dead, the essence, the energy. I don't believe that we exist as personalities after death. I've mentioned this before. I do believe that a spark of electricity leaves there are three possibilities, and we all search for the answer to this, of course, is there life beyond the grave, and the answer to that is yes and no. So if you're looking to talk to your mother or your uncle after death, I don't believe that's possible because I don't think the personality or the sex or gender of an individual exists after death. The energy, I do believe, exists after. And you could liken it to a computer whose interior works is damaged, and you can't access the information. Well, if somebody has Alzheimer's or has a stroke, it doesn't mean the information is no longer there. It just means that the mechanism is broken. But at death, that little spark leaves the body, I believe, and as it retreats, it shrinks back to its original form, like a spark, or if you throw a log on a bonfire and they all skittle up into the space. And within that spark is contained all of our lives, all of our lives' experiences, the voices, the sounds, all of our loved ones. And that little spark, to me, is essentially is the soul, if you want to call it that, it's either that or there's nothing. Now, then you get into religion, of course, and you've heard all this before. I mean, I absolutely, totally believe that we were visited by
ETs, aliens,
of course. You know, sure. And you remember our good friend Michael, our late Mr. Michael Luckman, and he and I were always in conversation about this. So, and I think, and I do believe, we all look for something to believe in. I believe that we were visited by these beings from another galaxy, another dimension. They probably did not have to travel, billions and trillions of light years. They just sort of stepped through a time warp or a wormhole.
Well, they learned how to bend space and time, I think.
Bend space and time. I always liken it to the fans of, remember the fans in the movie Casablanca, how slowly the propellers went around? They could probably mesh through that. If you use the analogy of the blades going around as a dimensional wall and just step through the spaces in the blades into this other dimension. So the more and more I read about this and study about it and think about it, so I really believe they created us out of the primates who were here at the time. So people always ask the question, are you a creationist or are you was it evolutionist? I think both. So we evolved to a certain point.
Yeah, absolutely. And then jump started.
When jump started, we were interfered with because they wanted creatures to do their slave labor and needed them to possess some kind of an intellect, but not too much, And I do believe that that's the way all of this resulted.
At what point in your life did you start realizing you had these psychic abilities?
Well, when I was a kid, again, in the circus, Conklin shows, my father and my mother tried to make a high diver out of me. Well, good luck. He got me up about 10 feet on the rungs, and my fingers froze to the ladder. He had to come up and...
Were you petrified?
Petrified. He had to peel them off the steps of the rungs of the ladder. And when I got back down there, good old terra firma. Boy, did I ever give that ground a good kiss. But, I looked up and I was always, some of your listeners have probably heard this story before, but always I was fascinated by the little old gypsy lady in the canvas candy cane striped tent, I used to hang around with her, and she had the crinkly black hair and the turban and the stars and the crystal ball and the tarot cards and the pointy nose and the red rouge, on her cheeks and the lipstick, except when she opened her mouth, she had a Scottish brogue. Probably the old joke was kind of a brogue that should have only been used for walking in. But she's the one who got me started and got me interested in all this kind of thing.
And you got better and better and better. Did you?
Unconsciously, though. It's not something you do consciously. It's like a dog. You do things instinctively, but you don't think about them. And I, as I say, my first experience that my mother says I jumped out of bed at 5 years of age and ran up and told her I saw Grandpa lying in a box and scared me, terribly. So 3 days later, of course, he died, and there he was lying in the box.
Lying in a box.
Well, I never knew I had Martians in my garden. And I never knew
There were aliens on my roof. I got shadow people, and they're living in my basement. Got a funny feeling Bigfoot's gonna be here soon. I was so blind before, I was so unaware. But now I swear I'm seeing Sasquatch over there. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Well, you never knew that your baby was a hybrid, but as he grew, you began to see the clues. Now you know the signs, 'cause you learned it from George Norrie. Even while you sleep, you got Martians watching you. I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. And I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast. Good morning or good evening, wherever you may be, whichever world you're living in, whatever century. Your voice is always welcome here on my radio. Call in with your space transmitter or your telephone. And I turned on my radio in the middle of the night, and I heard things I need to know. Now I can see the light, and I also see a ghost. 'Cause I'm listening to Coast to Coast.
For Dan Galante, Tom Danheiser, Lisa Lyon, Lex Lonehood, Sean Latasseur, Stephanie Smith, Chris Burles, Tim Banal, George Knapp, and Ian Punnett, I'm George Norrie, somewhere out there on Coast to Coast AM. We'll see you on our next edition. Until then, be safe, everyone.